Five women have accused New York Governor Andrew Cuomo of sexual harassment in and out of the workplace, including unwanted advances, kissing, and repeated discussions about their romantic lives. Some of that alleged behavior took place just in the last year, well after the Me Too movement brought more visibility to the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace. New York's Attorney General has started an investigation into the claims. In the meantime, some but not all prominent Democrats in that state have called for Cuomo's resignation. Meanwhile, Republican Congressman Madison Cawthorn and Ronnie Jackson have also seen recent reports of past harassment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that things have changed at the workplace or in politics since the Me Too movement went into high gear a few years ago? Have you noticed a culture shift in your own workplace? In the case of politicians, should sexual harassment, in effect, disqualify people from staying in office? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jennifer Drobeck is a professor at Indiana University's Robert H. McKinney School of Law. She's an expert on sexual harassment law and consent law and is the author of several books on the topic. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, there have been a few high-profile cases. Governor Cuomo in New York, the highest profile. As you have followed the reporting on that story, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's really important to wait and see what comes of the investigations. As we know, these are allegations, and the alleged perpetrator and others have called for an investigation. And so that needs to happen. In this country, we have a presumed innocent until proven guilty standard for criminal law that usually rules in civil law, although the standards are different. But I think we need to know more.
Last week, Governor Cuomo addressed the allegations. Here's a listen to a bit of what he had to say.
I fully support a woman's right to come forward. And I think it should be encouraged in every way. I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional. And I truly and deeply apologize for it.
And Jennifer, that sense that he made people uncomfortable with his behavior, that's stepping away from, I guess, the legal or civil liability side of things and into the workplace culture side of things. Do you think that with the high profile Me Too movement, that there's been awareness of a changing expectation of how we behave in the workplace?
Yes. I've heard that people say, well, given hashtag Me Too and Time's Up, why is this still happening? Mm-hmm. And my first response to that is that cultural change is a bit like an aircraft carrier. It is slow to turn and modify. And so we need to be patient as these changes do occur, as we turn the ship, so to speak. But the ship is turning. If you look at the popular, now decade-old, TV show Mad Men about an advertising agency and Don Draper and Elizabeth Moss and John Hamm were in it, that show, I think, accurately portrayed rampant sexual harassment at work. That type of behavior wouldn't exist in today's workplace. And the fact that we're having such open and meaningful conversations about this topic means that change has occurred and will continue to occur as long as we take steps to keep the ship moving in the right direction.
Now, I know the legal system has changed on some of these issues since the time of Don Draper's real life counterparts. In the year since 2017, when it wasn't when the Me Too concept started, but it was when it went really high profile, have we seen legal changes when it comes to protections from sexual harassment in the workplace?
Yes, some. And ironically, Andrew Cuomo has been one of the instigators of that change. For example, The federal standard is that in order to be actionable in a court of law, sexual harassment has to be severe or pervasive. My understanding of New York law is that Mr. Cuomo advocated for that severe or pervasive level to be dropped from New York state law. And I think that that change was enacted for the human rights law of New York in 2019. So with the amendments going into effect in 2020. So change is occurring. There have been a few bills to go through Congress sort of modifying and making changes, including in tax law regarding non-disclosure agreements and other minor aspects of these cases. Is more change needed? Absolutely. But we are seeing some, and I never like to dispute at least some progress.
We're talking to Jennifer Drobak from the Indiana University School of Law. We are talking about sexual harassment and consent back in the news again in the American political world a few years after the real high-profile Me Too movement came to light. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Anna is with us in Madison. Anna, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I work in the sales sector, which is definitely still a field that struggles with sexual harassment deeply. And the Me Too movement has definitely affected it in the sense that my coworkers will say things like, oh, but don't report me to HR. You know, we don't have to make this a big thing. So there's definitely still a need to continue the push forward, especially with older generations who have a higher tolerance for what I would call abhorrent behavior.
And I want to clarify, they'll still say the horrible thing, but then say, don't take me to HR, though. Do I have that
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Exactly. And it'll kind of come out as like a joke. They'll be smiling about it, you know. And there's definitely still cracks about the Me Too movement. Well, we don't need to make it like that. But it's just like, except it does have to go like that, because as two professionals working equally in a field, we need to be treated at the same level.
Do you feel, Anna, like you have recourse? Is there somewhere you can go where you feel you can safely raise these issues?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole different issue. We did actually have an incident with my coworker that was brought to HR, but he still works there. It's a frustrating thing when the levels of power above an employee are still a little bit in an old mindset. You can't change a system if the people on top, the people in power, are the ones making the change, because they're still stuck in that mindset. The people who are in power are not for the Me Too movement necessarily.
Anna, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm very sorry to hear that. I guess, Jennifer, I'm not necessarily surprised to hear that. What can a workplace like Anna's and a business, because if you're in sales, you probably work with other companies too, what could they do to change that mindset?
Well, there are a few things they can do. First of all, those people who are in key leadership positions at an organization need to recognize that this phenomenon exists. Some people who enjoy privilege want to keep that privilege, including the privilege to harass. And so these key enlightened individuals need to call on resources that can help steer the ship, that can help create cultural change within the organization. And that means an ombudsperson, perhaps a complaint line, someone to give live in-person training. I'm also working with the idea now in a new paper of treating sexual harassment like a misappropriation of corporate assets, only in this case, it's human assets. That affects the corporate bottom line. It costs money for companies to allow people to harass in terms of absenteeism, low productivity, and other losses. and also to deal with complaints and to defend litigation and to pay people like Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly millions of dollars to go away. So it is in an organization's best interest financially as well as morally and ethically to deal with this problem. And once key officials in the organization come close to understanding that, then the change begins to occur more quickly. And what I call the corrupt predators or the cancers within the organization, they get excised. Now, if I may, there's a problem with what's going on in the case of Governor Cuomo is that while I don't think that he's on the level of Harvey Weinstein or Roger Ailes, I'm not sure what category he's in the two lesser categories. I say that the first is clueless. The clueless don't really realize that what they're doing is wrong or having a negative impact on people. But once they're informed, they get it and they're remorseful and they say they're sorry. And those people don't need punishment. They need training and education because they will reform. The second category is the careless or could not care less. They know what they're doing is wrong. They do it anyway because they're getting their jollies from it or some sort of a lift or emotional satisfaction. Those people will not reform just with education. They need sanctions, consequences. And that may be true in this case in New York. I'm not sure which it is. And the investigation will help demonstrate which basket we're in. So I think we will know more soon.
Thanks again for that call, Anna, at 800-642-1234. Jennifer Drobak stays with us, professor at Indiana University's Law School, looking at sexual harassment in the workplace and accountability, in part after five women accused New York Governor Andrew Cuomo of misconduct in the last year. Also, just checking in a few years after the Me Too movement got big and drew a lot of attention, not just to the women who are experiencing it, but to the people who are perpetrating it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the Me Too movement has done enough to change the workplace culture around harassment? Has anything changed where you work? Are there certain people or job sectors do you think the movement hasn't done as much for? And for politicians, what should be done to hold them accountable? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Jennifer Drobak, law professor at Indiana University, expert on sexual harassment law, looking at what's changed and what hasn't in the workplace since the Me Too movement began and got high profile a few years back. Still time for your calls, maybe your experiences or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. We've got Kim on the line in Madison. Kim, hello.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that I, you know, not to be disrespectful, but I think this is a somewhat naive way of looking at who benefits and who doesn't and how we're going to stop this kind of behavior. You know, I was sexually harassed from my very first job at the age of 15 and then unfortunately assaulted.
Kim, are you still
and then there? I had, yep. Can you hear me?
Yep. Keep going.
Okay. And then I've had like a series of jobs my entire life where I've been harassed at work, and I've worked both in the sales industry and also as an educator. And I've had principals multiple times say really terrible things to me. And I lost a teaching job 1 year, not so long ago, because the principal said, well, sure, I'd be happy to grant you tenure, but, you know, you have to have dinner with me Saturday night. So it really is very pervasive. And the only way that I was able to get this principal to stop was to go to my union. And once I went to my union, you know, they threatened to take action. And that was really the turning point. You know, really rich people, bosses, corporations benefit from pitting people against each other. And so the idea that, you know, we just have to educate the bosses out of it and then things will get better, I think it's kind of naive. I think women and also everybody who's opposed to sexual assault needs to organize together, and that's really the way we're going to get genuine change. Because if it was just a matter of, like, understanding that what you're doing is wrong, people in the 1970s went through the same exact struggle, right? Women's liberation movement was a real movement. So if it was just a matter of changing ideas, then we would be in a much better position than we are. So there really have to be consequences. And I think unions and a real women's movement, a vibrant movement on the ground where we're demonstrating and marching and demanding appropriate behavior is really what's necessary. I think Cuomo is quintessentially the way that rich white men think of the women who work for them. And Kim, that's how they treat us. And I think it's disgusting.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience, Kim. And Jennifer, I hear kind of a sense of a need for empowerment, because part of the story here is sexual harassment as an abuse of power. What do you think of what Kim had to say, Jennifer?
Well, I actually agree with Kim completely. But I guess my only friendly amendment would be that it's not just a matter of punitive consequences. We need a full toolbox of approaches to the problem, which includes, as I said before, if you have a corrupt predator, excision from the organization is really the only way to end that problem. If it's somebody who is careless, could not care less, then sanctions absolutely are going to be needed in a graduated fashion. But I think that we don't want to abandon our notion of proportionality. So the consequence has to fit appropriately to the behavior in a graduated fashion. We don't want to cure a problem with a sledgehammer if a minor adjustment will work. Now, sometimes the minor adjustment won't work, and we need to be savvy about when and will it won't. Is this about power? Yes, absolutely. You can't really sexually harass someone unless you have some power, and the more power you have, the better the opportunity you have to harass. So I think we need to recognize that, and that this problem, I don't think, will ever go away completely. But the fact that we are recognizing it, doing something about it, moving forward with more and more appropriate legislation, and I think putting a number on the bottom line as to what it's costing companies, no company wants to keep an embezzler in its midst. And someone who is dealing with an embezzler wants to get rid of that person. And I think that's appropriate also in someone who is taking human corporate assets for their own use and enjoyment, contrary to the best interests of not only that person, that human being, but also the organization.
Kim, thanks for that call. Go to Avalon now in Madison. Avalon, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think that the Democratic Party has a real problem with Me Too, and this is evident based on, you know, the rampant calls for Cuomo's resignation and an investigation that we did not see for Joe Biden, who has a similar list of allegations against him, ranging from inappropriate touching to sexual assault. And I think that, you know, this is not a court of law, and I understand that there's a, you know, innocent until proven guilty is the standard in a court of law. But when we're talking about politicians, when we're talking about people that have vast power, I think that we need to ask the question, should these people who have these allegations be in office? You know, and I don't think that they should. And I don't think that we're going to see a change in the culture of sexual harassment in the workplace when we have a president who has sexual misconduct allegations after having a Republican president who had the same.
Avalon, thanks a lot for the call. How does an organization, a Democratic or Republican Party or a film company or whatever, make sure they police their own, even though their own is leading them to success in some ways?
Well, to this point, I think Evelyn raises a really important distinction. we're seeing very different responses from people based on political association, party, and timing. And so I'm seeing a double standard. And I'm thinking, was it proportionate for Senator Franken to resign over something that was taken, from a photograph that was taken many years ago? And perhaps he should, but I think that there should be consistency. And I also think that it would be naive, and this is to get back to Kim's point, to think that political opponents won't use sexual harassment. And now I'm making this reference with respect to both and all parties, that they won't use sexual harassment as a tool to undermine a political candidate with allegations. I'm also thinking of the allegations against President Biden. Also to say that the behavior by former President Trump and Governor Cuomo is an equivalent, I think is a mistake. I think with Donald Trump, we had a tape recording of him saying that he felt it was okay to grab women's genitalia and allegations of serious sexual assault. If the allegations of serious sexual assault against the governor are true, then of course that we have more relationship between the two. But I think, again, I think we all are protected by the rules of evidence and the standards that we have under the law. And I would hate to see those eroded because we have a concern that the problem isn't getting solved quickly enough.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Jennifer Drobak from the School of Law at Indiana University, looking at sexual harassment at the workplace. This is Central Time.